What's up, everyone? This is Connor with Crosstown Chatter, hosted by me and Colin, my White Sox counterpart. Today is going to be a fun episode. We get to cover opening day as well as some other things that bled into the new week, both play today. Some exciting news. We are going to be expanding our platform to YouTube. So you'll be able to see our beautiful faces if you so choose to watch instead of just listen. And we expect to expand our platforms to Instagram as well as TikTok in the next coming days/weeks. So exciting stuff happening over here. But Colin, if you want to go ahead and get into the opening day White Sox festivities, be my guest.
Yeah, absolutely. This is our YouTube premiere, if you will. Obviously, we'll still be on Spotify, Apple Music, and a couple other platforms you can watch us on or listen. But yeah, so I get right into it. Opening day started last Thursday, the 28th. And ever since then, the White Sox have been defeated. Well, you've heard of undefeated, and then this is just defeated, along with some White Sox fans feeling the exact same way. The first three games, we were playing the Detroit Tigers. We lost by one in every single game. One of the games, we went into extra innings and just couldn't get that last run in. I didn't necessarily hate what I saw this weekend, but there were some things that I definitely would have liked to see. I know everybody's going to make the excuse that it's early, and
it is.
Yeah, it is early. But and it is. However, there are some things that, like, you wish you would have seen differently.
Oh, like your first base coach actually being on the sideline and not delaying the game?
I actually just watched that. Now, he must have been taking a mean shit or something.
Because I'm like, where was he? And I'm like, if he was shitting,
I saw him adjusting his shirt, like, when he got to first base too. So I was like, well, I don't know. What does that tell you?
He had that new milkshake at Comiskey, or guaranteed rate. You know, he was eating that 16-ounce bad boy with the marshmallow on top, and it hit him. Hit him in the fourth.
Well, watching this past game, I probably would have ordered a milkshake too. So, but yeah, so lost by one in each of the three games playing Detroit, and then they played today against the Atlanta Braves, and that was a 9-0 feat. Honestly, I didn't see the Braves, like, overpower this team at all. They were just hitting in the gaps and hitting where people weren't. I mean, I do like, one of the things I do like that I've seen so far is some of the defense. I'd have to go back and look, and I don't think we've had too many errors that I am aware of, but definitely could. However, some of the plays that I've seen have been pretty solid, especially by Moncada, DeYoung. I know DeYoung's bat hasn't really been there, but Andrew Vaughn's been pretty solid at first base. So defensively, we've talked about it a little bit before. That's what they were aiming to do this season. So far, I'm kind of liking what I'm seeing. It's just finishing ball games is going to be an issue. A lot of people like to throw that fake stat in there towards the playoffs part of the season, where if you gather all the games that you lost by one and score a couple more runs and you factor those in as wins, yeah, it's going to look a lot different. However, a loss is going to be a loss. And after coming off a 101 loss season, this is not how you wanted to start this season.
No, it's not at all. And I thought you guys could, like, the Braves, you guys getting stomped out by the Braves, not shocking at all. I'd be worried about the Cubs getting stomped out by the Braves. But you guys not even taking one against Detroit, that was like, damn. And especially with Crochet, him having that start, that was, I mean,
you're going to win a lot of games by allowing only one run. You should.
But when your bats aren't awake.
Right.
I mean, honestly, the offense is, it's not good. We both know this. Like, no. You're probably going to have a lot of games where you score. I could see your offense being a type of offense where you either score like nothing or you score like 15. Like, and it's just a really hot, cold, like, and then you lost to Eloy, shocker. could have predicted that. I would have put my entire bank account on Eloy having a leg injury at some point during the year.
I wouldn't have bet that it was going to be in the third game, though.
Are you really shocked? He's a DH. No, I'm not sure. I don't know how you get hurt as a DH.
Wow.
Like, you're swinging a bat and running the bases, and he's not fast. He's not a base threat.
Well, I think he got hurt.
He's a threat from on the bases.
A home to first.
Is he the type of guy you just hope he hits a homer in his first at bat, and if he gets on base, you just pinch run for him and say, hey, thanks for the 1AB?
That's one of the times where I wish I could be a fly on the wall is when they talk about offensive strategy. Because I thought that they were going to play a little bit more small ball. I thought they were going to try and just hit for average, get some base knocks. Like, no, we're back to the same. Everybody's trying to hit homers besides Nicky Lopez. And, yeah, it's worked out for a couple people. But, you know, when Luis Robert's not hot, he's striking out. I think he struck out three times today. And let's dive in a little bit more to the offensive strategy. Eloy's out, right? Next man up in that DH position is going to be Gavin Sheets.
I don't know why.
I don't really hate Gavin Sheets, but I didn't like what I saw today. I see him come in. First of all, it's a weird strategy by Grafal sending him in with a lefty pitcher. I mean, I don't think Gavin Sheets' numbers are that great, but I mean, when he was, I think he had two strikes, and then he still has that same super long swing, and he's trying to hit it out of the ballpark. It's like, dude, you got Yoan Moncada on second base. He's got a little bit of speed. All you had to do was hit it into the outfield, and we could have got one run today. I mean, unless you want to end the game with zeros, I mean, it's a cold day and you want to get off the field, whatever, but this is your job. Like, let's get it going a little bit.
Yeah, and to add to that, like, I just looked at the White Sox box score just to see who's doing what. Like, it's four games, so, like, one player hits a home run, it's going to bump their OPS a ton. But Luis Robert's the only one who looks – like, who has numbers where I'm like, oh, that's pretty good. Yoan Moncada's right there, too. He's at, like, a low or a really high 700 OPS. But,
yeah,
like, your offense has been invisible the last four games.
Mm-hmm. You're not going to win a game with two people either, normally. No, I mean, Luis Robert almost did, but he's not going to have too many games where he hits multi-home runs.
You guys might be the Angels. You guys might be, like, the new Angels. We're like, Luis Robert did something crazy that's never been seen before, and then it's like, Sox lose 8-3.
Well, I will say the Angels are looking like the Angels right now. It's even worse. So
they lost.
I would compare it more to the Athletics. I think we would have a tough time beating the Oakland A's right now.
Did you see what the Oakland A's did?
Yeah, they sent Ruiz down.
Sorry, not to get off topic, but that's insane to me.
I don't know why.
He has a 1200 OPS to start the year. Why are you optioning him?
It made headlines already. Like, it was starting to trend. Sense.
He stole, like, what, 60 plus bases last year. Like, there's value. Like, he didn't have a great OPS, 650. That's 654, right. I think. But, like, what are you doing there? Sorry, I just had to get that out there. Had to get that out. That was, like, the big news I saw today that made me shit my head at the A's. I was like, what are you doing? I don't know if it's service time manipulation. I don't know what it is.
You never really know.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, it is a business at the end of the day. However, let's turn it over to how the Cubs did. I was kind of watching them a little bit, and it's sad to say that even today, I mean, I've just lost, I guess, my attention span already when it comes to the White Sox.
Yeah. You texted me. You said, I stopped watching the White Sox game. I'm watching Shota and Imanaga. That was like right.
I mean, how do you not? How do you not? We'll definitely dive into Shota a little bit, but tell me about opening day and this weekend.
So I was able to go to the game Saturday. That was fun. It was a great game till Ben Brown got blown up, but I still got to see Ben Brown debut, so that was a cool moment. I think at the very least, I think Ben Brown is going to be like a pretty good reliever at his floor. I think his ceiling is like a mid-rotation starter, because that curveball he's got is just disgusting. There's no other pitcher in the league that throws a curve. It's classified as a curveball, but like StatCast picks it up as a slider, even though it's not a slider, but it has like 4+ inches of horizontal and vertical break. On top of that, he throws it like 86, 87 miles an hour, which is really fast for a curveball. And he was pumping, and I get it. He's in relief. He's amped up. It's his, you know, MLB debut. He was sitting 97, 98, at least on the scoreboard clock. And I was like, damn, he's got a little gas to him. So then it got me thinking, I'm like, he's ramped up as a starter right now. Like if he does have to, you know, eventually go into a relief role, if that's the role he goes into, because starting maybe is not his thing, which I still think it is. Like he's 24 years old. He's got option years. I think you still give him time to figure that out because of the value there. But in my mind, I think if he's sitting here sitting 96, 97, 98 with his fastball and he's ramped up as a starter, when he gets into that reliever role, it'll probably be 97, 98, 99. And it doesn't sound like a lot, but the extra couple miles an hour makes a huge difference in how your pitches play.
I would say he might touch 99 a couple times. I don't think he'll sit around there.
I don't think he'll sit at 99. I'm saying like he'll sit like 97, and then he'll get up to like 98, 99.
You got to think like his adrenaline must have been through the roof getting called up on a whim.
I left before he finished his outing.
You're talking about Eloy getting injured. Let's talk a little bit about Mr. Steele getting injured already.
Yeah, I'm getting into that. Sore spot. I you know, we went into the Rangers and we won 1 of 3. I'm happy with that. World Series defending champions away, ring ceremony. I will say the crowd was loud for the Cubbies. Cubbies travel well. Almost the guy behind me said, "Are we at Wrigley right now?" Because every time the Cubs did something, everyone was cheering. So
that's pretty
cool.
That
was funny. Yeah, it was funny. And, you know, it's typical. I've been to a couple Cubs games at, like, the Red Stadium and stuff like that, White Sox. Kind of the same ordeal, right, with, you know, Cubs travel well. So that was cool to see. Justin Steele getting hurt. That hurts. I was a couple beers deep, and I was not happy. I was a big sad boy. I did not like that. I was all my hopes and dreams went down the drain, basically, even though I was praying to God it was just a cramp. It was a strain, hamstring strain, but I guess he's out till early May, which thank God we have pitching depth. And when I say pitching depth, we don't have top of the rotation pitching depth. Like no one that we have in our depth right now is going to replace Justin Steele's productivity. Not going to happen. But just, you know, I what I'm thinking here, right? Justin Steele gets hurt. He's our dude. He's our ace. We have him for this year, then 3 more years. You definitely want to make sure the longevity piece, he's healthy. He's good. He's not, you know, you want to make sure that when he comes back, that he can last the rest of the year, whatever that can be, right? The rest of the year pitch, he's going to miss probably 5 starts. So whatever innings he can pitch, whatever he can do, you want him out there. But on top of that, I am kind of excited to see this team face some early adversity, just because I think I would rather, if you had to give me like, hey, Steele's going to lose a month, and you had to ask me which month I would want him to lose, it would probably be April. April's tough conditions to pitch in. It's early in the year. Guys, you know, you guys are setting the tone, right? It's not like you're making a playoff.
Wait a minute. Tough conditions. Mm-hmm. You were in Texas, dude.
No. I'm talking about like when they play at Wrigley. They're not playing every game in Texas in the dome.
No, not everyone, so, but
Show today was going in fucking rain and it was freezing.
Yeah.
So
destroyed
if I had to pick a month, it would be this month because it's like, okay. Cause it's almost like getting rejuvenated in May. Like, hey, like for me now, losing Steele, that's a big deal. That's a guy who's going to get you wins. If we can be, when he comes back, let's say it's early May, I would love to be in a position where it's like, hey, the Cubs are like 5 games above 500 or hovering around 500. Then we get Steele back, maybe even Tyone back. And it's like, all of a sudden it's like, okay, the rotation solidified, our offense is going, now we can make our push and now we can be aggressive and move that forward. That's what I'm hoping for. I don't want us to see, and thank God for Shota Imanaga. Well, I'll dive into his whole start later, but after what happened with Steele, the injury, he was shoving against the World Series defenders, like just looked like an ace. Then he had Kyle Hendricks, which honestly, I think I talked to you about this off air. I had a feeling he was just going to suck the first start. I just had a feeling. He actually looked good, just his command wasn't there. And when his command's not there and he's hanging stuff belt high, he's going to get roped. He doesn't throw hard enough and he doesn't have nasty enough stuff to be able to get away with that, right? He's not a Tyler Glasnow, right? He's not a Dylan Cease. I'll give him a little time to ramp up because he usually needs to settle in and feel comfortable and he'll adjust. He always does.
I think everybody's going to have to settle in and, mm-hmm. and get a little bit more comfortable, and they will. I guess it is early. However, mm-hmm. when you start to pick apart guys, you also got to remember the entire outlook of what the rotation and the bullpen looks like. And I honestly think the Cubs are looking pretty solid as a whole. Especially with Shota.
Yeah.
He's a huge
he looked like an ace today puzzle. Too.
Absolutely.
He looked like an ace. And then he'd be
an ace on the White Sox right now.
Oh, absolutely. He'd be an ace on any team.
A lot of them.
Jordan Wicks too. If you look, you know, Morel at third base, and we'll get into that a little later. If he didn't make that error, Jordan Wicks doesn't give up those runs, and I know they're not earned, but like he had 19 swing and misses in 85 pitches and six strikeouts.
Texted me that. Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's real. Those are really good numbers, and 11 of them were with the four seam fastball against a really strong lineup. So that gave me like the overall stat line for Jordan Wicks did not look great, but I really liked what I saw under the hood. Similar, real quick, my last point on the opening day, similar to Seiya Suzuki, every ball he's put into play, I believe every ball he's put into play, or like a vast majority of them, have been hit over 100 miles an hour. If you look at his stat line,
I think I saw that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you look at his stat line, I would go, ooh, not great after four games. But part of production is hitting the ball hard. Christopher Morel's been hitting the ball hard too. But he's not hitting it right at defenders, so that's why his OPS is over 1,100 right now. So
yeah,
it's give and take. Again, I usually like to make I don't even know what the word would be, not assumption, but like I like to form my opinion usually around the 30-game mark. That's usually when a lot of players start getting around 100 ABs, a little bit less, a little bit more, just depends on what the offense is doing. So.
I'm kind of scared to get to the 30 game mark, to be honest. Like
you guys know that the White Sox are the only team to not have won 25 games since the 2023 All-Star break. That's almost 80 games. And you have not won 25 games.
Wow.
How does that make you feel?
Just about the same as I did at the end of the game this afternoon. I mean, it's the same disappointment that, and I'm not alone in this. I mean, I think there's probably more optimistic. Actually, I wouldn't say there's that many more optimistic White Sox fans than me right now. I try to bring light where I can with this ball club. I was actually joking around with one of my other buddies saying how. We picked one of the White Sox worst seasons ever to start a baseball podcast. I'll just let that one sink in.
Yeah, it is. Cubs, thank God for the Cubs
are looking pretty solid. I mean, yeah.
This is like 2020, like two Cubs. And now White Sox, like this would be the worst podcast ever.
Definitely could be.
Nothing but shame to talk about. It'd just be like, oh, Cubs lost 10-3 today. White Sox lost 9-6.
But hey, I mean, our first base coach got on, Talking Baseball podcast with John Boy. I mean, bad publicity is still publicity, baby.
What did he say?
I think they just posted the video on the Instagram. I don't think they they said anything just yet. I'm sure it'll be a video eventually.
For those of you that don't know, the They could not find the first base coach today. And apparently you cannot play a game unless you have a first and third base coach. I did not know that. I don't think I've ever seen that happen before. But even he didn't want to be there. So understandably so. I'm assuming you want to dive into the Garrett. Is it Crochet? I suck at
it. Yeah. Somebody, I was listening to ESPN 1000 today, and I don't know who they had on air at that point, but this guy was calling him Crotchet. I'm like, I mean, I'm not the greatest with names, but I know it's not Crotchet. Like, come on. I think it's Crochet. You know his real name. It's Crochet. Say his real name. He's our best pitcher on the entire team right now.
I like Crotchet.
Give him some respect.
Crotchet.
I don't think so. That doesn't roll off the tongue as better as Crochet. But anyways, Crochet did awesome. He really took that very pressure intensive role, and like I said last week, he grabbed it by the horns, and or that he was going to, and he had 8 Ks through 6 innings. He gave up 1 run, which is understandable. 6 complete innings, and then they would they give it to after that. Oh, Davey Garcia. Davey Garcia is another one that I can kind of go into. He's going to be a very hot and cold bullpen guy.
I don't even know who that is, to be honest with you. No
idea. Not a lot of people do. Not a lot of people. Not a lot of people even knew the names of the guys coming out of the bullpen. Obviously, the rotation names have been more of the topic of conversation. And I think it's kind of a little bit of a crapshoot right now on who's coming out to relieve besides Michael Kopech. I mean, Michael Kopech has been outstanding as well. I knew he would take on this role pretty well. I don't think he's given up a run yet. I think he's only given up a couple hits too.
Enjoy him while he lasts, because he's getting flipped to that deadline.
I was actually thinking too, going off a little bit on off topic. The more I think about it, I think we are going to be a selling team at the deadline.
You think?
I think it has to be. I think it has to be at this point. I think I was kind of neglecting that fact, but we have we're trying to hold on to whatever I have at this point. But we have a few guys that are I can already tell are going to emerge. I think Luis Robert is going to be like, I don't know. I don't think he'll actually be traded.
I think he'll be in the rumor mill. I don't think he'll get traded, because I think Getz is probably going to ask for the moon and the stars for Luis Robert.
It'll be a cease situation.
Yeah, and that's if he performs. He needs to perform like he did last year too. So that's
not the first, but definitely one of the first players to have a multi home run game already. So
then we really wouldn't have anything to talk about if Luis Robert got traded. Like,
well, and here's what made me think about it.
Vaughn, is that who we talk about on offense?
I don't know who's actually going to need a third baseman. I'm sure actually a handful of teams might, but I think Yoán Moncada is going to be in that
expensive. He's expensive.
That trade talk. Well, that's what they want. They want a lot back.
I wonder if the White Sox need money for a better prospect. I wonder if they do that. Cubs did that back in the Anthony Rizzo trade. That's how we got Kevin Alcantara.
I wonder if we could trade Jerry Reinsdorf at the deadline.
That'd be nice.
I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully that'll be in the talks.
Maybe you guys will have another new milkshake at the trade deadline. You'll trade Andrew Vaughn for the boomstick at the Ranger Stadium, the 3-foot-long chili hot dog. That's going to be the official trade.
The tri-colored dessert egg roll that I saw on MLB's tweet.
Well, the meatball sliders with garlic knots for buns. Ooh, that'd be a great trade for Yoán Moncada.
Now we're just getting crazy. It's getting off topic here. But anyways, back to Crochet. I'm excited to see him pitch again, honestly, because he's honestly
it'd be Wednesday.
It might be Wednesday. However, speaking of pitching, I don't know if you saw this. The White Sox re-sign Mike Clevinger.
I like that move.
I think every White Sox player or fan would disagree with you.
That they don't like it?
No.
He did fine last year.
He's also like a terrible person.
Yeah. Baseball.
Which, baseball. I mean, I just find it surprising how you're going to re-sign this guy who you didn't really want to sign him.
Was it a major league contract or a minor league contract?
I think it's a major league contract.
I like it. I mean, who do you got in the – who's pitching? Like, who's even pitching tomorrow for you guys?
Let's find out.
Do we know that? Let's see.
Could be TBD.
Oh, it's Crochet. Oh. You guys are literally starting him on the fifth day. What?
Crochet versus Ronaldo Lopez.
You guys don't have a fifth starter. You guys don't have a fifth starter.
Did you see that?
Yeah, versus Ronaldo Lopez.
That's awesome.
I forgot Ronaldo Lopez signed with the Braves.
Damn. That'll be a fun game to watch, actually.
That'll be cool.
If you don't know who Ronaldo Lopez is, we got rid of him. And I think I talked about this in another video, actually, or a recording. We got rid of Ronaldo Lopez and Lucas Giolito to the Angels for Kai Bush and Edgar Carroll. I think since then, Ronaldo Lopez and Giolito have moved around to a couple different teams. And obviously now Ronaldo Lopez is on the Braves. So that's their fifth starter. I didn't even know that. Versus Crochet. And I think if Crochet could dominate, this might be our only chance at a win in this series. I think we might pick up one more against the Royals.
You guys face Strider on Wednesday, so you better hope Crochet shoves and Ronaldo doesn't.
That's all you can hope for.
You guys might start the season 0-6 if you don't win tomorrow.
We also might have 106 losses.
I think I put the win. I think I set the win column at 58.
Yeah, I think so. You'd be pretty close. A lot of fans are very unhappy and saying a lot less than that number right now. So there's only so much you could really say about the White Sox as a whole right now. You can pick apart the good things and try to be optimistic. I think eventually, and I'm calling this now, this is probably Pedro Grifol's last season with the White Sox.
Last year should have been his last season with the White Sox.
I thought it was going to be, but this year, starting this way especially, is going to be his last year.
The only reason Grifol is still on the team is because Jerry's too cheap to pay two managers. That's the only reason why. The only reason, and I bet you Grifol is not making a whole lot of money. I bet you $1.5 million, $2 million a year, maybe. I bet you everything. It's just Jerry being cheap. Because you had probably some good options this year. You had some real good options you could have made, but instead you kept Grifol, who had everything wrong last year in terms of the team, and then the team, the team chemistry, the fundamentals. So, I mean, I if they don't show some sort of improvement this year, at least at an individual basis, and like, hey, we actually give a shit, we're going to come out and play, Grifol's got to go.
And now that I think about it, like, he and everything that we've heard, they were stressing a lot about who's going to be in the rotation. You don't have a whole lot of big guys or big name guys, so you work with what you got. However, let's move on to defense. We've said this before. They've tried to enhance the defense and become a more defensive team. Great. Well, there's a lot more aspects about baseball, especially at the major league level, than those two variables. And you need every variable to win baseball games. And after going 0-4, which potentially 1-4 tomorrow, and then guaranteed pretty much 1-5 on Wednesday, once you get to the five, you get through these five game increments, that's when you start to ask more of the questions and less speculation. So
I think the we want better defense hill that they're dying on is just a fancy word of saying we don't want to pay good players, so we're going to take players who are past their prime who still can play some defense for cheap deals so we don't have to pay actual players actual money.
I mean, yeah, we said it before, it's definitely a business at the end of the day, but
well, this is not good for business. They're running it like WeWork. Exactly. So
yeah,
we'll see how that goes.
Exactly.
But while we're on the defense conversation, I did want to get into the Cubbies defense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not loving it. Not
really.
Not loving it. What I saw today was fine, except for Morrell.
What do you have? Like, one error?
Well, like Ben Brown getting charged with those six runs was kind of bullshit, in my opinion, because I was at that game. Morrell, it was hit 102 miles an hour, but it was a line drive right at him, and it went like through his glove. Error. Dansby Swanson, another one. I think they hit it like 104 at him. He was deep in the hole. Should have fielded it. Should have been an out. Ben Brown got one hit right back at him, hit off his leg, whatever, bloop. But, like, there was two errors, and they ruled it a hit because it was hit hard. That's BS, in my opinion. That inning should have been a 1-2-3. Not 1-2-3, but it should have been over before all six of those runs started, even if they make one of those plays. So I didn't like that at all. Dansby kind of scared me a little bit, but then he made some good plays today. So I was like, all right, like, it was just maybe the turf or whatever it was. But Morrell. Oh, Bellinger looks awesome in center, by the way. But Morrell at third. I think I was texting you today. I said, I don't give a shit what he does at third if he keeps hitting like that. So yeah, that's true. But, like, dude, you got to be able to make the routine play. You got to be able to field the ground ball and throw it to the first baseman.
Like, well, I think the best example that you'll relate to this and a lot of other Sox fans can relate to this is it sounds a lot like when Jake Berger started. Like, he had the approach at the plate, but he was making these weird errors or just not making the great plays at third base how you have to be able to do at the hot corner.
You have to.
But you saw me smirking over here.
Uh-huh.
Because if you remember, or our listeners remember, I think it was either last week or the week before, this guy was yelling at me, saying, gold glove this. And every single position, he basically named a gold glove. So it's honestly fantastic to hear about the defensive struggles from all these gold glovers. So that's why I was, well, you saw me weirdly smirking over here.
Well, here's the thing, Colin. Even with all those errors, we're still 2-2.
That's
we're still in the run. We have a win. We have a tally in the win column. So
right. Here I am talking about the optimism about our defense, and we're fucking 0-4. So
I don't think that, like, I'm not saying our defense is shot. I'm just saying that kind of hurts me.
Yeah.
Seeing like that just play out. It's gonna happen even with like the best defenses. I'm gonna give Morrell as long of a leash as I can, as long as he keeps hitting. If his hitting goes away, then it's gonna be like, why the fuck is he out there? But as long as Morrell keeps hitting, he doesn't need to post 1100 OPS. As long as he keeps producing, keeps hitting, keep making contact, keep doing what he's doing, I'm okay with him learning the position because his value at third base is immensely greater for the lineup construction, for the overall just everything, any value you can think of with Morrell at third as an average defender with his bat is more valuable than him at DH. So yeah, I want to give him as much time as possible because it's a difference maker, him having a defensive home and then freeing up that DH spot. Because otherwise, you're going to have Madrigal or Wisdom at third, probably Madrigal. And you know Madrigal's bat, he can hit singles, he can slap hit, but he's not producing like Morrell.
No, so, but he'll never make an error over there.
No, Morrell, dude, I don't know why they couldn't just give Morrell some of the Madrigal magic. Dude never played. He played like one inning in college of third base, and he was a really good defensive third baseman last year. And his arm is not, he doesn't have an arm, which is even crazier.
I know.
Like, all of a sudden he's just like, oh yeah, I have 10 outs above average, which for anyone listening is really good. So
he's at second base the whole time.
Second baseman.
Yeah, he didn't need to throw that hard.
No, but like, and you got Nico at second, so you're not going to put, you know, that's Morrell's original position at second. But you're not going to remove a gold glover at second. I was almost thinking, like, I remember, like, people back in 22, they put Nico at short. And they were, there was a ton of question marks on like, can Nico, is Nico's arm strong enough? And it was, he was great. I don't know. Do you move Nico to see if he could try third?
I don't think I don't think you start reinventing the wheel there. I think you'd pretty much just.
I think you could play fourth.
I want to see Morel succeed at third.
So do I. But like, yeah. I'm saying, if it gets down, like Morel can't in like a couple months.
Yeah.
Council's going to have some decisions to make that are going to be tough.
It'll be tough, but no matter what, Morel's going to be in the lineup. I mean, I think it was his Saturday that Robertson was pitching at the end of the game, and he hit like a 500-foot foul ball.
Yep.
I actually watched that part. I was like,
thought it was gone.
Really surprised with that. I was sad. That swing. He's got a great approach to the plate, and then you see today he had an inside the park home run.
They ruled it an E7 single, but
yeah, it pretty much was
bullshit because it didn't touch leather.
He didn't touch it at all.
Did not touch leather. It should have been a triple with an error because the second one was an error. But that's bullshit. Should have. And they didn't even give him the RBIs. I was like, come on. He would have had like 10 RBIs. Yeah, you know, they didn't even give him the ribbies, which was, I thought was BS. But they gave these other guys all the hits in the world.
Yeah.
Whatever. Whoever rules that, kick rocks.
Dang. Well, speaking of hits, I mean, I just wanted to throw that in there because it's quite amazing. I think a lot of people are going to be talking about it is, again, Shota Imanaga, six innings, no hitter through six innings.
Through 5.2.
Was 5.2? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 5.2. He had two outs and he gave up. And I'm actually happy he gave up the hits at the end because part of me was like, let him throw the no-hitter. And but I then know they wouldn't have.
He gave up two hits and then struck out the last guy to close the inning. So
I was watching when that happened, and that was electric. Nine strikeouts, two hits, no walks, six innings pitched, 92 pitches.
If you didn't get a chance to see this guy pitch today,
watch it.
Go watch the highlights.
Go back and watch it.
He put on a clinic.
I don't think I've been – that excited to I missed the first inning, and then I caught most of the innings after because I was still working out in the field, so I was like trying to like log in when I could. But man, like it was he looked disgusted. Hitters looked like they were just baffled, they were just like, I don't know what's coming. I will say,
if you're not from Chicago, you're not around here, or you just didn't step foot outside today, it was terrible outside. And I think it was starting to rain towards the end of the game. I think it sat around like 42 degrees mostly. I live down the street from Wrigley, so I pretty much know exactly what the weather was like. And it was a nasty day. And this guy just seemed to throw whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted. And that's all you can ask for as a coach. I think I saw Council go up to him in the dugout after and like give him his praise. And so that was kind of fun to watch, I will say. And that's just not from a White Sox perspective. That's from a baseball fan. It was cool to watch. And I'm excited to see what else he could do. He might even move up in the rotation. Who knows?
I don't think he's a true number four. I think they did that for rest reasons. Because in Japan they have 6 day every 6 days you pitch, not every five. So I think they want to make sure he's got ample rest. With this off day coming up, I think that would allow him to actually get the rest he needed. Because there's like two in between the span. But the only thing that does worry me about him is something I brought up earlier in the podcast. I think like episode 2 or 3. He gave up 0 ground balls, 8 pop flies, and 3 line drives. If that wind was blowing out today, he would have given up 2 or 3 home runs easily. So that's going to be something to 100% would have given it up.
Maybe one.
The wind, there were 2 balls for sure that would have been out because they were caught damn near on the warning track. And when that wind's blowing even a little bit, it'll carry.
Yeah. Well, I will say,
if it's fault, but if he could just keep striking guys out,
it
won't be an issue as long as they're solo home runs.
Yeah. No, if you could strike guys out all day, I mean, I'll take that no matter what. But I think because of his arm angle and the actual the line at which the ball comes in, you're going to see a lot more pop flies than you are infield ground balls. I say that because he is a lefty. He throws pretty hard. He's not the biggest guy, but he's got some nasty stuff, and most of it all curves down. Not a whole lot of sideways movement. It's a lot of going to the ground. So that causes you to drop your shoulder a little bit and go get it, and a lot of times you pop it up. If you're rolling over, that says a lot more about your swing as a hitter than what Shota's doing on the mound. So I think you are going to see that a little bit more. So hopefully he plays at a lot of stadiums with very far fences, and you'll see a lot more outs or indoors.
Yeah. Or the wind's blowing in, but I'm not worried about it. It's just, it's the reality of what he is. He needs to keep that fastball high and make sure it doesn't get too low. I mean, I saw hitters taking swings at shit in the dirt. Mm-hmm. In the dirt. His first strikeout in the dirt.
You're guessing.
And I was like, oh my God. And he threw McMahon had a 13 pitch at bat. He kept fouling everything off, and he threw a disgusting splitter. Mm. Like, he's a splitter? I'm like, where the fuck did that come from? Just disgusting. Absolutely nasty. And I was like, I'm like, this guy's the real deal. And then just walking out to Chelsea Dagger.
That was his song.
Awesome. That's his song when he comes out to pitch, Chelsea Dagger.
That's how you get the crowd of Chicago pumped up. That's awesome.
He knew about it, and in the end, he was like, oh, well, I went to a Blackhawks game before I signed here, and everyone got super pumped up for the song, so I wanted to pick a song that, like, the culture would resonate with. And I was like, that is so fucking cool. I'm like, dude,
that is awesome.
You got to love the guy. Comes out in his press conference and speaks English. Hey, Chicago, what do you say? Cubs are going to win today?
Yeah.
I just don't see how he's not a fan favorite now, even before, you know, today. Like, I'm excited to see what else he's got up his sleeve in the next 3 to 5 years, which I'm hoping it's 5. But we'll see, depending on the contract. But
yeah, we'll see. But yeah, I mean, they did good on the Cubs on the north side here. They had a lot better turnout than the south side. They kept showing. Wrong, they man. Always – where?
Wrigley, for the weather being that shit in April, it was rocking.
The White Sox were in Chicago too. Nobody was there.
Well,
not surprising, but like, I hate when they do this and there's like 1,000 people there and people are starting to filter out after they've already sat down because it's terrible outside and we're losing to the Braves. And they keep panning to the entire stadium view and there's like no one there.
Was it the A's?
Yeah, it really did. I think we might have probably, I don't know what the attendance was, but.
Oh, I could look that up right now. It's in the game log.
Well, you might have to. But that doesn't account for, we were in a weather delay, I think.
Oh, sure were we. We were 10 miles north of you. Boo-hoo.
It definitely was not as bad over here. I could look out my window, and I'll tell you that. But
you're like 2 blocks from Wrigley. White Sox fan living in Wrigleyville, folks. Suspicious. I just doxed you. Sorry. Show up at his apartment. He likes unwanted visitors. It's his favorite thing, he told me.
Yeah, unless you're a Cubs fan, please stay away.
Oh, all right, I'll stay away. Don't worry.
That's why this guy is all the way in Texas.
13,700 and whatever. I don't know how many of those. That's just tickets bought, though. It's not people in the stadium.
I'd say half that actually showed up.
I mean, they fit 40 in there, don't they? So about a third throw. And the Cubs was 40,072.
Yeah.
Well. Over triple the amount that the White Sox had. I did not think we were hitting the $40,000 mark on game one in shit weather. That actually makes me so happy. Obviously,
it was your home opener, though.
And it was Shota Imanaga debuting. So obviously, you know, if I was in Chicago, I definitely would have skipped work and gone.
I will say this about Shota. The last thing I'll say, I did see this on TV because I know you're a big baseball card lover. I think they're not only signing a Shota rookie card, but every debut pitcher is now wearing a debut day patch on their
jersey. That. That is so cool. Yeah.
And so that will be taken off of the jersey and be in this playing card that is also signed in some random Tops.
Bucks.
Yeah. So if you're big into playing cards, then or
I am into baseball cards. So I have a Shota Imanaga rookie card coming soon. And I'm probably, so for those that don't know, I'm into baseball cards to collect them. Real quick, Shota Imanaga, when you're listening, when everyone else is listening to this, it'll be today. But when we're recording this, it's tomorrow. They'll release his debut with his number and everything like that. And you can actually buy autographed cards. They'll set it at a price and it'll be autographed. It could be a one of one or it could be like out of 99. So I might splurge depending on the price and buy one because I feel like that would be a good investment. If not, I'll just buy the Topps cards, like 20 of them for like $80 and see if I can resell about half of them and get my money back. But
you got to keep those. Let it go. Let it grow. But yeah, anyways, we're approaching a 45-minute mark here, and we don't need to make this too long. Only four games have been played, and we'll have a little bit more to talk about as a consensus next week. But yeah.
Ooh, I got one more thing. Unless you are going to do one more thing.
No, go ahead.
Okay, I want to talk about real quickly. This won't take long. It's just something that was on my mind. I want to talk about Craig Counsell.
Okay.
Like, he's been – it's like – with Ross, I felt like when he would use his bullpen, I would question everything. And now I don't feel that way.
Mm-mm.
Like now I'm just like, oh, like why? Like today he brought in Yency Almonte with a 3-run lead. I'm like, why wouldn't you go to like Merriweather or Leiter or Neris? You know, your big three setup guys, you know, for this 3-run game. And Yency came up. And he did good. And then they scored two more runs, and then Drew Smyly came in and pitched two. And I was like, that's interesting. So, like, the bullpen's so volatile is kind of what I'm trying to get at. And, like, but they've looked – the bullpen's looked awesome. Like, that's the one – like when they won against the Rangers, they had five-plus innings of shutout baseball. They held it down. Today, I mean, Shota did most of the work, but, you know, you use your two middle relief guys, really, and Yency and Drew Smyly, and shut them out. And I'm kind of sitting here like does it's only four games, but does, like, Counsell have this secret sauce to, like, just managing these games? It's a different vibe than last year is what I'm trying to get at.
It's, no, definitely.
It's really interesting.
I've said this before, and I'll say it right now. That your biggest signing this year is Craig Counsell.
100%. And I'm so 100%. Excited to see what happens in the next couple months and years. Yeah. Because, like,
yeah,
our team's going to be built on margins. Jed Hoyer fucking came out and said, basically, we're not a playoff team. And we're going to have to overperform to make playoffs. He fucking said that in an Athletic article. Not, like, word for word, but, like, he insinuated it. Which pissed me the fuck off because I'm like, get all these players on short-term cheap deals you could have signed that are fucking good. Sorry, yeah. I'm swearing and going on a rant. But, like, with Counsell, all of a sudden it's like maybe they can, you know, with this bullpen management and the players stepping up, like, maybe we are looking at a new era of Cubs baseball finally. You know, maybe we're getting out of the slums. So
I think he definitely seems to know what positions to put certain guys in, and where I think he knows that they will succeed, and if they don't, then he learns from that and then goes from there. You see that a lot, or you saw it a lot when he was in Milwaukee, transitioning over there. You saw it today, obviously, but
when he got rid of Morel and put Madrigal in the seventh inning.
Yeah,
the eighth inning. I love that.
He knows what he needs to do. Like actively before games and in games, but transitioning over to Grafal, I don't see that. I think he's just throwing guys in there, just hoping that they get three outs and that's it. I mean, I could be wrong when I say that, but I really don't think I am. If you look at all the box scores, there's a different pitcher in there like every other inning. So you end up with five guys that get in there. Davy Garcia pitched, I think, in two different games in 2 days. And it's like you have a lot of other guys. I actually, one of the guys in the bullpen I like is Tanner Banks. He's a veteran on the White Sox, and he's kind of like a softer throwing lefty. And that just messes up a lot of guys. Like if you put him behind Garrett Crochet, who's a hard-throwing lefty, that's not a combination you see all the time. You usually switch back and forth.
It's not a good one because they're going to just see the same thing, but softer velocity. So now they're going to be teeing it up. They're going from 97, 98 down to 93, 94. All of a sudden, they're like, oh, this is going to be a meatball.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It doesn't seem like there's any thought process behind where he's starting to put guys.
No rhyme or reason.
Yeah. Like, also, I haven't talked about him at all, but he hasn't been playing Braden Shoemake how he needs to be.
I'm not familiar with his game.
He was actually on the Braves for a little bit and was potentially going to start for the Braves, but they ended up letting him go because they found, what's his name? Harris? I think it's Harris. I don't know. Anyways, but his first at bat, he homered. So, I mean, he's not a Braden Shoemake. Dude, it's our backup shortstop. It's our backup shortstop. DeYoung, not really doing anything at the plate. He looked pretty smooth. I would compare him to a A-level, B-level Brandon Crawford defensively. That's what he looks like. He's very smooth. He knows where the ball is going to be, and he attacks it. But I think Shoemake's pretty close to that caliber, and he's not afraid to hit either. So, I don't know. It's just going back to Grifol, it's just there's not a whole lot of rhyme or reason to what he's doing right now. He's just seeing what sticks, I guess.
I don't think he's there. I don't think Grifol's there. Okay. Council, right? He's done this twice already, and I love it. I fucking love it. He'll throw a reliever in. The reliever will get through the inning in six, seven, eight pitches. It happened today with Drew Smyly, and it happened a couple days ago with Mark Leiter Jr. They'll get through an inning really quickly. And instead of getting a new reliever out there, he just lets them continue.
Yeah, and send him back. Yeah.
Yeah, sends him back. And today, Drew Smyly threw 19 pitches. He can still pitch tomorrow, even though he threw two innings. Yeah. Only threw 19 pitches. He can throw tomorrow. So now you're not wasting bullets. You're letting this guy who's already loose, already warmed up, already has the feel, go out there and do what you've been doing. They're not going to throw him out there for 50, 60 innings. But hey, this guy's warmed up. He threw a half an innings worth of pitches. Let's get him back out there and save the bullpen. Mm-hmm. I love Absolutely. That. Ross would sometimes do that, but it wasn't always. He was always trying. I think he tried to get too cute with it. If a guy's going, you let him go.
Yeah.
He just got everyone out in six pitches. Let him do it again.
Yeah, and I know we're bouncing back and forth between – we're just talking about the managers right now, but it's just Grifol. I can't figure this guy out at this moment. I got to do some more research and try to conceptualize what he's been doing.
Is he from the Royals?
No, he's from Houston.
He's the Astros guy? Okay.
Man.
Okay, I remember the Cubs almost hired Grifol.
That'd be a different team.
He interviewed a different team. 2020, or this was, sorry, this is before Rossi. This was 2019 going into 2020. They interviewed Grifol.
I mean, who knows? If we really start slipping, is it unheard of to get him out of there before the season ends? I don't think so. You probably wouldn't do that.
You guys did it with Han and Crane Kenny. What's his name?
Oh,
the president. No, he came. No. Grifol came from the Royals.
He was on Houston for a little bit though. More recently.
No,
pretty sure.
No, you hired the Royals bench coach. I know the other guy you're thinking of. Very similar. I don't know why the fuck they hired Grifol. I actually couldn't tell you why they hired Grifol. Getting back to that point. Because you're hiring from a losing organization with a shit farm system with not a lot going for them. And they got more going now than they did. But I don't know why they make that hire. Usually when you hire a new head coach.
We love the Royals. I don't know what you're talking about. Our GM's from the Royals. Our second baseman's from the Royals.
I don't get it. You guys poach. from shit organizations. Like we got our new GM. He's from the Indians, and you're like Indian or the Guardians. You're like Guardians. They know how to develop pitching, which is something we were trying to do. They have a good farm system usually, which is what we're trying to do, right? We got Council from Milwaukee. Same ordeal. They have a low budget. They're able to expand into the playoffs for years, years, years. So like, I don't understand why the White Sox don't go, hey, let's poach from like the Dodgers, the Rays, the Astros, the Cubs. There's so many good teams, the Braves. There's so many teams, or like not even good teams, but good organizations that are ran that you guys could poach from.
Well, they thought they were doing that when they got Maldonado and Kevin Pillar, and it's like
bullshit. They stuck. They are not difference makers.
Well, hang on, and they're not. But they and I didn't like the fact that they're relying on now players. It's like not too many players are going to be looking up to other players. It does happen, and it should happen, but they're not coached by the players. You need. I agree with you.
I'm with you. I'm not yelling at you. I'm yelling at you as a Sox fan looking at ownership. Absolutely. They're fucking making excuses. Because it's not fun. Like, I feel bad for White Sox fans. Like, there's a rivalry. Feel fucking bad. It's like I couldn't imagine like being a Cubs fan having that. Like, and I was too young to really like I know there was always like the 2000s, the 90s, like the early 2010s. Like, that's where I kind of felt it, like the early 2010s when I started getting into baseball. But, but there wasn't this huge up and down. It was like we were bad, getting better, good, World Series, still contending, and then a gradual decline to a, and now we're going back up for our run.
Yeah.
Right? With you guys, it was bad, good, good.
Where are you starting from?
Bad. Like 2010.
Okay.
I'd say 2010, 2011, whatever the last time you made playoffs was.
Before
2019, 2020.
I always like to start high, right? In 05 when we won.
I mean, you can go all the way back there because what? You guys made 05 playoffs, 09 playoffs, and then nothing till 2020?
No, 08, I think 09. And there was a whole. Like almost decade stretch where we weren't really doing a whole lot. And
the thing that pissed me off most about that stretch for you guys weren't bad. You guys always missed playoffs by like a handful of games.
Yeah.
You were in that high 70 to low 80 wins. You just couldn't make that next step because Jerry wouldn't pay. And it just pisses me off in general when I see teams operated like that, like not even the White Sox in particular. It's because it's bad for baseball.
Yeah, it is.
And that's what pisses me off.
No, I agree. And I think Texas is a great example of that. I mean, you look at, like, they've always wanted to win. Never have. This year was their first year.
Lost back-to-back World Series.
Yep. And they kept getting better. They never got rid of everybody just because they lost. They just kept getting better and progressing instead of, like, taking one step forward and two steps back like the White Sox. So
they lost 90 games. And they signed Marcus Semien, Corey Seager. They then lost like 94 games in 2022. Yeah. And they went out and signed DeGrom, Eovaldi, traded for Scherzer. Traded for Scherzer. They signed another guy too. I forgot. And they win the World Series. They go from a 94 loss team to the World Series.
And then after the World Series, they draft Wyatt Langford, who is projected to be.
Oh my God, he was drafted 9 months ago. And he's like scary. He reminds me of Corey Seager when Corey Seager was a rookie.
Yeah.
I remember when Corey Seager was a rookie in 2016. I remember like when we played, especially in the NLCS, I was shitting bricks every time he came up to the plate. Like I genuinely feared Corey Seager when he was on the Dodgers and we had to face him in the NLCS.
Yeah.
And that's what I felt like every time Wyatt Langford came up to the plate. I was like, this guy's just like, he was playing college ball a year ago.
Yeah,
like that's like, and now he's in the pros as like a top prospect.
You get more people going to the Florida games than you do for the White Sox right now in the third and fourth game. So, anyways, as you could tell, we like to go on different tangents in baseball. I mean, it is something that we could probably talk about, and we do talk about pretty much all day. We're approaching now the hour mark, so we'll pretty much close it there. We'll have a lot more to talk about next week. For our second YouTube video, and It'll be our 9th episode. So now we are rolling. Baseball season is rolling. And yeah, it's been fun and can't wait to tune in next week.
I'm so glad we don't have to talk about spring training anymore. I'm glad real baseball is back. For those of you still here, thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week.
Appreciate you.